It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Cousin Sub's Sub of the Day, Tony Cartagena.
What's up, everybody? This is the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN. I'm Tony Cartagena, subbing in for Homer, who's off for the whole week, so you'll get me today and tomorrow. Alex Stroth held it down earlier this week. As he is every Thursday, our guest today is going to be Brian Belaga. Before we get to Brian, real quickly, because we're going to get into some Packers, we're going to get into some football, I wanted to start today's show with a text that we got middle of the day from our director of content here at ESPN Milwaukee, Brian D. Not to be confused with Brian Belaga, who I'm sure would be a great director of content. Middle of the day, Brian D's got meetings, he's working, he's doing a ton of things, sends this text to the group. Council sticks with Boyd too long and gives up a dinger to Vladdy. Love to see it. That's a Chicago Cubs update from the ESPN Milwaukee director of content middle of the day, because he too has Milwaukee Brewers fever, just like everybody else. We can't watch the Brewers today because they're off. So he's scoreboard watching the Cubs like the rest of us. They lost 2-1. It is just another great day to be a fan of the Milwaukee Brewers and a fan of all the teams in our great state of Wisconsin. Just wanted to start the show with that. And now I will bring in the man of the hour, Mr. Brian Belaga. What's up, man?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm great.
Good to be back on with you.
The Cubs lost today, so it's a good day. I mean, that's just where we're at right now in the state of Wisconsin. When you were playing for the Packers, this is not related to anything training camp, but when you were playing for the Packers, obviously, you guys took care of the Bears pretty frequently under Aaron Rodgers. But when you guys would play, I don't know, let's say you guys played the Jets, right? You get back in the locker room, you guys saw the Bears lost, the Vikings lost, the Lions lost. Did you scoreboard watch at all during the season?
I guess it would depend on what team, right? Like, okay. We didn't think much about it. Probably the first 4 weeks, there wasn't much thought about it. I mean, unless it was one of those teams that you thought would probably be there late in the playoffs, right? Like, gotcha. You look at, you know, any given year would have been Seattle or San Francisco or, you know, any of those teams you would look and be like, oh, if they were losing, you'd be like, that interesting, or, you know, just kind of to see it. It'd be more scoreboard watching when you kind of got towards the middle of the year to see how the division started to pan out and how Chicago was doing and Minnesota and Detroit and how they were doing in their games. But for the most part, right, like, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, you know, downplay it, but a lot of the times the divisions were pretty secure by midway through the season. We felt pretty good about where we were at. We didn't have to do too much scoreboard watching. There were a couple seasons where it was a battle. Like, you had to battle with Detroit a couple years, and Minnesota, there was a battle a year or two in there. But for the most part, you know, you win your division games, or you at least go 3-1 in them, there's a good chance you're going to win your division. And so if you take care of business.
Yeah, you guys did that a lot with 12 under center. You guys did that a lot, and it was always great. Can't wait for the Packers to get back to the point where the division championship, where the NFC North is pretty much just the standard, and it's expected year in and year out. Hopefully they can do that under Jordan Love. Got a ton of things to hit on football-wise today with Brian Belaga. The Packers have joint practices. We got Jason Wilde coming up at 5:15. Once again, this is Tony Cartagena, Cousin Subbing on the Homer Hour for Homer with Brian Belaga for the hour. We got you till 6 o'clock. But I started the show talking a little bit of Brewers. And, Brian, I'm not sure how much – I'm sure you've heard this. You have the internet. With the 12th win yesterday, the Milwaukee Brewers got free burgers for everyone in the state from George Webb's. Now, when you guys used to have your offensive line dinners, let's just say you guys decided to take that dinner to a George Webb and it was burger night, right? How many burgers could your offensive line room put down on an O-line dinner night at George Webb's?
Oh, man. If it was, it would get ugly in there. I mean, you would probably, you just got to average, say there's, an O-line room, there's what? There, you know, you got the starting five and probably, you know, there's nine guys, eight guys per 53, and then the practice squad guys. So you got around 15 guys.
Oh, 15. I was thinking 50 burgers, about five apiece, thinking there was 10 of y'all. But with the practice squad, we're at 15. All right.
Yeah, about 15 guys. So, like, you're thinking, yeah, I mean, you're thinking 4 to 5 burgers a guy. There could be a guy that goes a little bit more than that. Just depends.
Hey, that guy just had a big day of cardio. He just needed to refuel. Yeah.
Well, see, what it was is, like, we always had weigh-ins on Thursday.
Okay.
So weigh-in day was Thursday. We did O-line dinner Thursday night. So guys would get done with weigh-ins. No worry about eating the rest of the week. So guys would take care of business Thursday night and eat whatever they wanted at O-line dinner. So yeah,
salad for dinner on a Wednesday and then a couple burgers on a Thursday night. Makes sense. Love it.
Yep. So, I mean, it would probably, I mean, it'd get ugly. I mean, I would say it'd get ugly. I mean, the amount of food that we would eat, at every O-line dinner was, I mean, looking back at it, it was absolutely appalling.
That's awesome. I mean, I love that. That's what it's all about. You work all day, you get to, you know, kick your feet up, enjoy some good food with the fellas at night on Thursday night. I love it. Now that the team is in camp, and I wanted to get to the joint practice, but I'll get there eventually. Now that the team's, you know, in camp, they're practicing, they're doing all those things. Is that where teams can, for lack of a better term, really come together? Like, it's not really on the practice field during some of these long days, especially in the heat, but it's the meeting rooms, the outings after practice, things like that, where you can really see a position group start to mesh.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously the work on the field is important, right? Like, I'm not going to downplay that. Like, I mean, you got to be able to work together and you got to put results out in the field. I mean, that's what this comes down to. But where groups start to bond, and I think you ask any guy that plays in the NFL and they're done playing, the one thing they miss is the locker room and the time not on the field, but it's off the field in the locker room with the guys and those moments, right? And the bonding moments. And training camp is like the most important time for that, because like there's so much downtime in between everything, right? Like, you practice – and then you come back in and meetings aren't for another like 2.5 hours because the coaches have to go up and grade the tape and correct it. So guys are just like hanging out, right? And you kind of have to, you may get a lift in a cold tub, and that takes what, an hour? So you got more time to just do whatever you want. So that's when guys bond and they talk and they're playing. I mean, we would play backgammon and things like that. You know, we would just goof around, and that's what, you know, the time, as you said, guys and position groups are able to kind of build that, you know, chemistry and camaraderie. Now, there's obviously other times, right? Like, you know, nights off at camp. We'd always, you know, go to the local establishment. It was called the Abbey, right by our dorm, right by St. Norbert's. That's where we would always hang out the night of, you know, right before a day off. Have a couple Pepsis. You know, that would be about, you know, like that's what we would do. And we'd push the curfew all the way to like the last minute because the dorms were right across the street. And that's where the O-line would hang out. And, you know, the quarterbacks would roll through there and different guys would roll through there. But I mean, we kind of just had our traditions and what we would do and kind of kept it the same. And every group had their own thing and what they did. But it's important in camp to like build that trust, that camaraderie. And these guys have been together for a while, but there's new guys that you're integrating into the team and there's rookies, and you need to make everyone feel like they're a part of it. So like the Packers offensive line, I mean, they got a new free agent. Like, he's the starting left guard. Like, you got to make him feel part of the group. He's going to play a big part of this thing. So like, it's all about making guys comfortable with who they're playing next to, and you got to be comfortable with them and trust them and all that. And that's all, yeah, it's built on the field with the tape you see, but that also gets built, you know, in the locker room and off the field as well, like just the time you spend with guys. So yeah, this is a big time for that.
Who had the closest calls consistently to curfew?
Oh man, I mean,
I'm just kidding. It was, you don't have to dime any of your teammates out. It's all good.
No, I mean, it was, you know, curfews at 11, guys would stroll in at 11:50 or 10:58, you know, the door, you know, I mean, it was, I mean, pretty, you know, regularly that was the way it would go. Right. I mean, and we wouldn't really push that early in camp. That'd be later in camp, is like, we were about to break at the dorms and we'd be able to then go home. Because that's when you were kind of transitioning out of camp mode into more of regular season mode, right? Like, when you get to these preseason games, like, you're more of in season mode. You're game planning. You're going through that whole thing. Yeah, you're still in camp and you're in a, you know, the practices still feel a little more like camp, but the way your day is set up, it's a little more in season. So guys get a little bit more of a routine and things like that. So those last few weeks in the dorm, guys, you know, push the limits just a little
bit. Sure, but, of course. Why not?
But nobody was, you know, nobody was like doing any, like strolling in late intentionally and anything like that. That was never the case. Guys were pretty good about it.
Gotcha, gotcha. You're listening to the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN. Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing for the legendary Homer, Brian Bulaga, with me today. We're going to have Jason Wilde in a couple minutes, but before we get to him, Brian, I do want to ask you about joint practices. It seems to me, maybe just because we're closer to it now, that they're happening all, like, just all across the NFL. I think the Lions were down in Miami. You got the Packers with the Colts, and last year they had, I believe, the Ravens and the Texans a couple years before that. Like, they just seem more and more common. As a player, do you love or hate the joint practice?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, LaFleur's first year in Green Bay, and we did it with the Texans. That was my first year ever doing a joint practice because McCarthy and Ted did not like them. They didn't want to do them. So when LaFleur came in and the Texans were the first joint practice, that was my first exposure to it. And like the idea behind it, like I understand the idea behind it. It is good work. Do I love it? Not really. Like, I mean, cause it, what ends up normally happening is tensions, you know, tensions rise and something normally ends up happening unless, you know, unless it's a, you know, the two teams have a pretty good understanding and they're actually getting good work in. And, but for the most part, you know, at least the ones that I were at, I mean, the Texans ones fight broke out, you know, when they came to Green Bay. And then when I went to LA, the 49ers came, fights broke out in that one, like I felt like every 10 minutes. So like, it's just a matter of like what teams are getting together to do the scrimmages. But the concept of having your ones go against ones is great because it's in a practice environment. It's not really tackling. You can control the reps and all those things, which from a coaching standpoint, like you feel great about, right? Like, okay, we can try to minimize the risk, but we're going against their ones and our ones are getting. So like, I understand that, but from a player standpoint, it's like, man, like it's another game. Like that's what this is. This is like another game, but they're calling it a practice. And that's so, kind of what it is.
So you said something interesting there. You said when your ones are going against their ones, obviously you can get good work, things like that. It seems like the Packers might be on their threes, their fours, going against the ones down in Indianapolis. We're going to do something that rarely happens on this show. We're going to try to be on the clock for our producer, Chris Larson, today. We're going to take a break here on the Homer Hour and ask Jason Wilde, who is all over these joint practices for the Green Bay Packers, about exactly who is on the field for the green and gold down there in Indianapolis. So keep it locked right here. A report on Packers joint practice with the Indianapolis Colts coming up next here on the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN.
It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
We have a Twitter poll in the field, a discount liquor Twitter poll here on the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN. Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing for the legendary Steve the Homer True with Brian Bulaga today. And I'll start off our appearance with Jason Wilde by asking him the Twitter poll question that we have on the field. Jason, in 1987, did you wait in line for free burgers from George Webb? Your choices are yes, no, and I don't believe this applies to you, no offense, but I wasn't alive.
I definitely was alive. First of all, I don't even, you know, you and I used to be really close. You produced our show. Now you're some sort of bigwig with directorial roles. You don't even say hello to me to start the segment? Just throw me into a poll question?
Here's why. There was a rationale. And I love you, Jason. I miss you. I wish I talked to you more. That's sincere. I'm not just making that up. The thing is, sometimes when I listen to radio interviews specifically, this happens a lot on ESPN National Radio, they have like 5 minutes for these guests. And they spend the first 2.5 minutes with the pleasantries, and I'm not sure people really care. So I tried something new. It didn't work.
State National Radio.
It didn't work. You know what?
Okay?
Chris, can we replay Wilby's Open? Hold on, Jason. Replay the Open.
Now you're really going to waste time.
On the Homer Hour.
That's what I'm good at.
94.5 ESPN.
Now being joined by Jason Wilby, Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing for Homer with Brian Bulaga. Jason, how are you today? How are the girls? How's everything in your life? Tell me it all, buddy.
It's great. It's great to be with you guys. Great to be with Brian. Great to be with the all-time GOAT of producers. And I don't care if Jesse hears me say that or not. So it's great to talk to you again. I appreciate you having me, and it's great that you're filling in for Homer as our cousin sub of the day.
Anytime I get to talk to you, it's great. Now, I do want to ask you a question, if that's okay. We good?
Well, yeah, I was going to answer the poll question.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the poll question. Hit me with the answer to the poll question.
You're really crushing it, buddy. Yes.
What was the poll question? I hope you remember.
I did. I stood in line for burgers at the George Webb on Forest Home Avenue between Oklahoma? I think it was on Oklahoma Avenue before Forest Home intersects it.
Nice.
It's from my youth. It was on the south side of Milwaukee, though. I'm a proud Milwaukee South Sider, and I did indeed stand in line for my free burger. And then people forget, we talked about this morning on our show, that 1987 team that won 13 in a row to start the season later lost 12 in a row.
Oof.
Which Tausch wanted to know if George Webb then required everyone who got a free burger to come in and work like an 8-hour shift to earn their burger back since the team lost 12 in a row.
I think that's fair. That's a good trade-off. Yeah. Before we get to, I know Bulaga has a bunch of questions for you with the joint practice. I wanted to just hit you with to start. Position players on offense, who played today that we've heard of? Because it seems like the Packers injury report is quite long.
Yeah, it's. I was just saying this to, unfortunately, Jesse, who is cousin subbing on Jim, Matt, and Molly over on ESPN Madison. I think what we learned today, without a shadow of a doubt, is that if the Packers have to play without Jordan Love and without 5 of their 6 top receivers, they're cooked.
Yeah.
That's not a recipe for success, and so when you're without Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, and Savion Williams, and oh, by the way, even your next guy up is now playing corner, right, in Bo Melton, when your only top receiver that's available to you is your first-round pick, Matthew Golden, that's not a great recipe. So I'm sure they're not as bad as it felt, and in fairness to Malik Willis, that's a tough situation to go into yourself. You know, you're basically playing with the twos, just like you would normally, except you're playing against the other team's ones, and you're not even playing with guys that you have a ton of rapport with. So less than ideal, but again, the most important thing to come out of Indy today is that Jordan Love, the surgery was successful. He is wearing a cast on his left hand for now, but that he intends to practice in some form or fashion next week. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like. He said very clearly, and Brian, I know you and I and Tausch talked about this yesterday, had this happened in the regular season, he would not have done the surgery. He would have just played through it, which I thought was an important piece of information that he shared today. They decided to do this because they had enough time before September 7th to have him be fully healed, so it's not something that's nagging. You've played plenty of years where you always had that some thing that was nagging. It didn't stop you from playing, but it put you in discomfort. They don't have to worry about that with his thumb because they had the surgery.
Yep. That's good to know. I mean, and, you know, it is, listen, no surgeries, just a small surgery, but I mean, it sounds like he's going to be back sooner than later. So it, obviously the offense sounds like was not good, right, by all means necessary. What were some good takeaways? I mean, the defense was good, I hear. Is that an accurate report that the defense stood out today in Indy?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, you know, first of all, let's be honest. The most important thing is that Jordan Love won't be in that cast for very long. So if he decides to have a Surfside, having heard your wonderful reads about it, he can drink it with either his right or his left hand once he's out of the
important.
Cast.
It's important.
Yeah, and it doesn't say sugary either. That's also important. So here's the thing. I mean, obviously, I wasn't there. I'm always reluctant to, you know, I don't want to be acting like I know more than I do because, you know, you and I at this point, neither of us were there. So we're kind of working off the same info. I did text with a couple of people just so I'd have some idea of what I missed. And you're exactly right. The defense had a strong day for the Packers. But, you know, again, I'm not here to grade on a curve, but Anthony Richardson kind of stinks, right? I'm not saying that, you know, he's never going to become a quarterback of success, but he hasn't yet. So I don't know how that factors in and what kind of a grading scale that impacts. I will say this, you know, I did text with somebody who said that Lucas Van Ness had another good day. And at some point, we probably have to start recognizing that, you know, he is setting the stage for the kind of season we have been waiting for him to have since they drafted him 13th overall in 2023.
Jason, when we hear as fans, it's so, I guess it's a little bit different when it's a joint practice, but you hear, you know, throughout camp, Lucas Van Ness had a good day today. He had a good day today. We've seen what he's done on the field the last couple of seasons. Is that Lucas Van Ness having a good day, or is that a big question mark at those tackle positions for the Packers specifically?
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Tony. I mean, that's part of the challenge, right? And you know, Blue knows this. If you have an offensive-backgrounded head coach, he always wants the offense to do well better than the defense, right? Mm-hmm. And he's always going to be more ticked off if the offense struggles, because that's his area. But so you have to look at it from both sides of the equation and say, yeah, that's great, when they're going against each other. Now, I don't know enough about the Indianapolis Colts starting offensive line. I'm not going to pretend that I know their depth chart, but maybe it was a little bit of that. But in fairness to Lucas Van Ness, you know, he's gone against Zach Tom a couple times in camp. He's gone against both Rashid Walker and Jordan Morgan, and he's had success against all of them. Now, not every rep, but he's had enough success that you look at it and go, okay, this guy's having a good camp no matter who he's going against, and that's an encouraging thing. So whether or not we're grading on the curve of Indy's offensive line stinks or whatever it might be, I think we have enough evidence through 3 weeks to say that Lucas Van Ness is having a good camp. Now, Brian would point out that we were saying the same thing last year about Rashawn Gary until Zach Tom came back, and then suddenly we weren't talking about Rashawn Gary, and then we got to the season, and Rashawn Gary had 7.5 sacks, and according to ESPN Stats and Information, he finished 45th in the league in pressures and 60th in the league in pressure percentage. So just because he had a strong start to camp did not necessarily translate to a super productive year. Now, he has had some moments. He had a sack today. And maybe in year two, in this system, he's going to have a big year. And it won't really matter what he did in training camp or in joint practices. But I would always rather have a guy doing well and showing me encouraging signs than being like, well, he had a really quiet camp, and then hope that he's going to turn it on. I think back last year to Luke Musgrave. Like, I remember talking about this with Brian. Like, he was having a really quiet camp, and then he had a quiet first couple of games, and they busted up his ankle and missed 10 weeks. So, you know, it's always better to be making a strong impression. And there have not been a ton of guys that have done that. I think Edgerrin Cooper's done that. I think Brenton Cox has had a pretty good little camp. Kingsley and Igbaré as well. So there are some guys that have jumped out. But again, these joint practices, you know, I'm very much looking forward to a week from today when we do this again, but it's in Green Bay and I'll be there to see them with the Seattle Seahawks.
Jason, do you know, or did anyone on the ground there tell you who started the reps off at left tackle?
I did not talk to anyone about that, and I was not monitoring Twitter closely enough to be able to answer that. Okay. That's an important question, though, because, you know, Rashid Walker's got to get back out there, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if he did team today or not. I'm trying to kind of scroll through here and see if Wes or Spoff posted that, because that's a huge question mark. Because, you know, the pendulum, and you and I talked about this too, like there was this swing. We went from, all right, well, Sheed's going to keep his job, to then him having this groin injury, and then us saying, Sheed's going to have a hard time keeping his job because Jordan Morgan played well against the Jets. So, you know, I'm trying not to swing back and forth. Interesting that Wes, who generally tweets that out, and I don't know if it's because it's a joint practice, they wanted to keep it under wraps, but he did not share the Packers starting offensive line. So I'll keep looking while we're talking and see if anybody else has that on their feeds.
Based on how the offense did, or maybe you know this already, does LaFleur plan on playing starters in the preseason game, in preseason two? Do you know that?
So what he told us was that his game plan was heading into the preseason was to play the guys, the starters, against the Jets, which he did, and his quarterback injured his non-throwing thumb. It was then to have his starters work in this joint practice today but not play in the game on Saturday. And then next week, and this is where I thought it was really interesting, his plan was to have the starters work in the joint practice and play in the preseason game.
Oh.
So when they get back, and look, he said it's highly unlikely that Love's going to play in the preseason game, the finale against the Seahawks. As Tausch put it this morning, let me help Matt out with that. There ain't no way they're putting Jordan Love back out there in a preseason game after what happened in the first one. About as far as the other starters, you know, again, he's not the only one, and it's not just the wide receivers. Like, Nate Hobbs is still out, right? Xavier McKinney, even though Goody said absolutely he'll be ready to go for the opener, he's not going to be out there. So it'll be interesting to see who they line up against the Seahawks that afternoon, because it's good. The one thing I can guarantee you, well, I guess I can't guarantee it, but I feel very confident, is that they're going to, if once Sheed is back and cleared for 11 on 11, those guys are going to rotate at left tackle, and it's going to go down to the wire, I think, to see who starts.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, because they've been obviously, you know, when Sheed was healthy, you know, Jordan Morgan was going back and forth from guard to tackle and, you know, whatever he was doing. So there wasn't really, as we talked about earlier, there wasn't really that competition where you could focus in on and be like, okay, you know, he's taking reps now. Now he's taking reps now because Jordan Morgan was moving all around. And now it's obviously Sheed is out and Jordan Morgan's taking all the reps. So, like, this needs to be, or I mean, for the coaches to evaluate this, the cleanest way is to have both of them back and both of them taking reps at the same, you know, in the same practices against the same type of opponents and joint sessions and preseason games. And I don't know if that's going to happen for Sheed this weekend. I think so. Like, we're talking next week is like how you're going to have to decide, which is wild that that's what it's coming down to.
Yeah, and look, may the best man win. I understand that, and I understand that's important. At the same time, Brian, I guess my issue here is that if it's, you know, kind of, if it's close, you know, if it's tie goes to the runner, I feel like the tie should go to the incumbent, not just because he's the incumbent, but what exactly, and I think you mentioned this to us yesterday when we were talking on our show, what exactly is their substitution pattern going to be if Morgan wins the left tackle job? And again, let me be clear, right? Your job as a coach is to put your best five out there. And you can't think the way I'm thinking right now if you're Steno and Butkus and LaFleur. I get it. But if Morgan wins the left tackle job, Steed becomes your swing tackle. But what happened? Like, how do you sub in given the different injuries? Like, if Jenkins goes down, do they just put in Monk? If Banks or Sean Ryan go down, I think we saw that you don't want Monk at guard, right?
No.
So then,
correct,
do you
yes.
put? So then, do you put Sheed at left tackle, and then you move Jordan Morgan to one of those two guard spots, even though he practiced all week at left tackle? Like, it feels like, as opposed to if Sheed wins the left tackle job, you have Jordan Morgan work at both guards and both tackles during the course of the week, so he's ready for anything. And he's got more positional versatility than Sheed does. So your sixth man, you're basically, you don't have to upset the apple cart at all unless it's Jenkins that gets hurt. Then you move Sean Ryan over, so you're moving two spots. But of the other four spots, you just plug and play with Jordan Morgan, and you don't have to do anything else. And so if he wins the job, then that's out of the equation. Then you're doing a whole bunch of juggling.
Yep.
Jason, it looks like we ran out of time for me to ask you about the most injury prone players. So I guess you can't do that today on today's show. But real quick before we let you go, Matthew Golden had a couple highlights that made rounds on the internet today. Obviously you've got to see him over the past couple of weeks in camp and everything, OTAs, but you've been around the team a while and just as a fan of football, does he remind you, at this point in his rookie season, does he remind you or give off vibes of anyone else that you've covered or been around all these years?
Yeah, big time, and Blue's heard me say this. He reminds me of Greg Jennings.
That's
he's faster. He's faster than Greg. And again, people forget because of the way Greg left and finding that Vikings helmet. Packers suck, Greg Jennings. He didn't make a whole lot of friends on his way out of town. But Blue played with him. I mean, he was a field tilting
when he was
wide
here.
Receiver.
He was great.
Yep,
he was.
Oh,
awesome.
Yeah. I've got scouts who told me that he would have been the Packers' all-time leading receiver had he just stayed here, which I think they're right. So I keep using this word. I know you got to go, but the way he runs, both Golden and the way I remember Greg running, they glide. There's just a gracefulness to the way they're not laboring like, say, Strofe on a three-cone drill. They just glide along the field, and they're athletic. They've got strong hands. They can jump. They're tough. So the similarities are pretty hard to miss in my mind.
It makes me sad that we ran out of time because I want to hear more about that. So next time, if I can sneak my way into subbing in for Homer again, I'll have to get some more on the Matthew Golden, Greg Jennings comparisons. Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour today. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
Tony, you still have my number. You can just call me.
Yeah, I know. But like, I feel like we got to let the fans into those conversations as well. Do you know what? I'll call you sometime. We got to catch up.
I look forward to it. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
That's Jason Wilde here on the Homer Hour. Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing in for Homer, Brian Bulaga with us today because it's Thursday, as he will every Thursday during the football season. More next when we return the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN.
You're listening to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
Tony Cartagena subbing in for Homer, cousin subbing that is, for Homer on the Homer Hour today with the one and only Brian Bulaga. And Brian, I got a question for you about one of your former teammates coming up in just a second. But before we get there, you got to tell me about some of your or one of your great partners that make your appearances on this show possible.
That's right. I want to talk about my friends at Surfside. Summer's heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka or Surfside lemonade and vodka to break the heat. Why I like Surfside so much? It just tastes better than all those other drinks you see on the shelf. It doesn't make you regret having a drink or two after you get done having it, because it doesn't make your mouth feel like it's loaded with sugar like all the other ones. Believe me, this one tastes different. Made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside's only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripes, sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
That's Brian Bulaga. I'm Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing for Homer today. And Brian, last segment we were joined by Jason Wilde, and I asked him, and I know you guys have talked about this before, but I asked him if just watching Matthew Golden in practice reminds him of anyone else he's covered, you know, even going back to, you know, Freeman and Robert Brooks and other people throughout other greats throughout Packers history. And he brought up the name Greg Jennings. I know Packers fans pretend they don't like Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings loved Greg Jennings when he was on the Packers, right? Like, I mean, he's an all-time all-time great wide receiver, Mount Rushmore, maybe outside looking in right there, who depends on who you ask. If Golden turns out to be Greg Jennings, Brian, how much of a win is that for this Green Bay Packers team?
Huge win. It's a huge win. I mean, Greg Jennings is a Packer Hall of Famer, if I'm not mistaken.
If he's not, he should be. I assume he is, but
I'm pretty sure he is. So, like, that's pretty good, right? Like, I mean, when you draft guys, obviously you always, the thing is, if they end up in the Packers Hall of Fame, that is, I mean, that's a great career then for that player, right? And that means that player was very successful. He accomplished a lot in the field. Obviously, statistically, but also for your locker room. He's thought very highly of in the organization. So if he ends up being like Greg Jennings and putting up those types of numbers, yeah, I mean, that is a big win, because Greg was a stud. I mean, Greg was a stud. I mean, again, and people could say whatever, you know, I mean, and that's the thing. Greg, and obviously, I mean, I don't talk to Greg. I mean, I played with Greg for a few years. I was young when Greg was in Green Bay. I was my first, second, and maybe my third year at the time. I don't know when Greg left. I forgot which year. But Greg was so good. Like, he was so reliable. You felt like every time the ball was thrown his way, he was going to catch it. Always explosive after the catch. Obviously, Packers, he has said stuff in the media and has said stuff since that obviously, you know, irritate some people, which, yeah, I mean, it is what it is, but like it doesn't diminish how good he was when he wore, you know, the green and yellow. The dude was unbelievable. And obviously how it ended is how it ended, but he accomplished a lot while he was in Green Bay.
I hate when that happens, when it's, you know, a guy is, 'cause there were a lot of 85 jerseys back in the day and they all said Jennings on the back, right? But like, when guys leave your favorite team, of course, you're a little like offended or a little hurt. You go play for a rival, whatever. But then when people try to diminish what they did on the field, and you can say that if you're talking about Jennings, you can say that if you're talking about 12, just because they don't like what, like, it's just like Greg Jennings demands that respect from people who watch football. So just getting that out there with the comparisons that Jason Wilde brought up between Matthew Golden and Greg Jennings. Going to finish talking about some Packers joint practices. And a couple other questions coming through for Brian Bulaga right here after the break. You're listening to the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN.
Welcome back to the Homer Hour on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
1, 2, you know what to do.
One more segment here on the Homer Hour, 94.5 ESPN. Don't forget to download that brand new ESPN Wisconsin app so you can take us on the go. All our shows, all our podcasts, all our talent, myself included, Tony Cartagena, cousin subbing for Homer. Brian Bulaga's all over the app. Packers updates everywhere. Download the ESPN Wisconsin app today. Brian, we got one segment left here, and the Packers obviously have a preseason game coming up with the Indianapolis Colts, and it was Jordan Love is done for the preseason. Adam Schefter said that at Jen Gabe and Chewy this morning. Jason Wilde all but confirmed that officially just a couple minutes ago on this show. So other than health, when you look at preseason game number two and the depth chart of players that they're going to be putting out there, who is there someone in particular that you're really keeping an eye on to see, you know, how they're going to fare or what they're going to look like when the regular season starts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I'm going to be curious to see if they put Golden out there because their wide receiver room already looks the way it does. Right?
Should they? I wouldn't, right? Okay.
No, I would not. I mean, but now we're getting into territory that we're not even playing rookies in preseason, which is like crazy, right? Like, I mean, it just F's because like this would be the time to get him those reps just to like work things out, right? Like just to, you know, even if he doesn't, you know, get a ball thrown at him, he's still running his routes. He's seeing coverages and he's just going through things. It's taking reps, but the way the room is right now, why would you put him out there? I mean, so yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it. I'll be interested to see if anyone from that defensive line gets reps. Obviously I doubt like Rashawn or Kenny are going to play, but does Van Ness get some reps? Does Jordan Morgan go out there and take reps? Because technically that is a competition still, and this is another opportunity for him to put another notch in his belt in the competition. So, like, that's another thing that I'll be very interested to see how that kind of works itself out. Because if Jordan Morgan goes out there and starts again and plays, you know, very similar to the way he did against the Jets, I don't know what the discussion is going to be. I know Jason talked about that. Like he's going to, you know, obviously if things are close, he's going to go with Sheed. But Green Bay, not, you know, the brass may not see it as close. They may not see it as close if Jordan Morgan continues to progress and play well and Sheed isn't taking any 11v11 reps, right? Like, I mean, that's what's happening right now. So I'll be interested to see if he plays. And then, I'm always excited to see Malik Willis play. I think he's exciting. He does a lot of fun things out there. So, like, obviously, you know, no weapons, right? I mean, they're really thin at the receiver position, so it's going to be difficult for him. Obviously, Jacobs isn't going to touch a ball all preseason, so he doesn't have the running back. None of the tight ends are going to play. So, like, obviously,
there's nobody play. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, so it's really going to be difficult for him to, you know, recreate some of that magic he did against the Colts last year. If I'm not mistaken, it was against the Colts, right?
He beat the Colts and the Titans when Malik Willis took over.
Yeah, so like it'll be, he won't get that same opportunity, but I always do enjoy getting to see, you know, him play because what he did last year. And obviously, I like when the backups get an opportunity to start, like the backup QBs, because I mean, they try to make the most out of that opportunity and they try to treat it like it's regular season and then they treat it seriously. So I'm excited to see that. Defensively, again, I don't know who's playing in the back end.
Yeah.
Like, I you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
McKinney's not going to be out there. We're obviously sure of that. Bo Melton is going to be a starting corner. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, he's obviously going to be starting. I mean,
that's wild.
Because they're not putting out Nixon.
Nope.
They're not putting out.
Hobbs is hurt.
Yep. They're probably not going to put out.
I'm guessing Valentine and Evan Williams on the you know further back there. Like Javon Bullard probably gets some reps. I'm guessing if he's not hurt, but honestly, I have no idea. It probably is. The way that things are going. It's interesting you bring that up, and I know we only have like a minute left here. But to me, that room is very thin. You lose Jair, and obviously Hobbs is going to miss all of camp. That room is thin. And if those DBs don't get help from the defensive line, if this team is going to win a lot of football games this year, it's going to look like the Bengals a couple years ago, maybe last year, where they got to put up 33, 35 points a game to be competitive. But like the defensive line, someone's got to show something. Wilde brought up some names like the Brenton Cox, Ingambare. Like these are good opportunities for guys like that to just get – live reps, I guess, and show something because like they got to bring pressure, like
100%.
It's tough.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you don't want to have to bring pressure with five or six guys to protect. I mean, you want to be able to drop guys in coverage, and like way to do that is win with four.
You can't be thin at defensive line and cornerback. It's a recipe for disaster. Brian, we'll have to catch up next week after the Green Bay Packers take on the Indianapolis Colts in the preseason game this weekend. Obviously, we have roster cuts and a lot of just very exciting football transactions going to be happening over the next couple of weeks as we get closer and closer to the season opener. The Milwaukee Brewers are off tonight, so they still keep their 12-game winning streak intact. Tomorrow night, they are in Cincinnati. Tony Cartagena, Cousin Subbin for Homer. Brian Bulaga with us on the Homer Hour. Download that ESPN Wisconsin app today.